We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
BestieBot co-founder and CEO Rich Everts has received recognition for his years of work in the field of artificial intelligence. Rich also founded Lancaster AI, which provides free monthly meetup discussions discussing the latest advancement in artificial intelligence. And we welcome Rich on The Spark today for the entire show. Why? Well, I'm glad you asked. As artificial intelligence continues to evolve, the good folks here at WITF wanted to ensure that you are in the know about everything artificial intelligence. So on the back end of the show, we'll be discussing how AI will affect certain job industries and if you should be afraid of losing your job to artificial intelligence. But up front, let's get to know Rich. But first, we had a Facebook challenge on our page where we asked which pictures were real and which were AI. Well, the results are in, America, and guess what? They're all AI. So that will throw you for a loop because it threw me for a loop. So like I said, we're going to get to know who Rich is first and then delve into how AI will affect our everyday lives. So Rich, thank you for coming on The Spark today. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me out, Marquise.
Yes, absolutely. So first things first, you know, this big thing called AI. It's obviously not Allen Iverson. It's artificial intelligence. So how did you get involved with this world of artificial intelligence?
Well, you know, it actually started a long time ago for me when I was a little kid.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was very young, and I was about 3 years old, I lived up in the Poconos, and I ended up taking apart this wood stove that we had for our family.
Wait.
And you're like, what does this have to do with AI? Because it's about taking things apart and figuring out how they work and putting them back together.
Ah.
And so you could say, I was kind of born for this stuff.
Ah, so you're 3 years old, and you took apart a stove.
Yeah.
Just to see
how it works.
How did your parents feel about that?
Oh, I tell you, I got in so much trouble.
I believe it.
Yeah. So, from there, I just continued working in that process. Mm-hmm. Did a lot of stuff. Went into undergrad. You know, when I was younger, my family, the school system wanted to skip me ahead a couple of grades for different things. Family said no. Mm-hmm. So I was a little bored, growing up. So I was like, okay, well, let's dive into just taking things apart and putting them back together and just see what happens. So I had a little bit of a challenge growing up, causing a little bit of mayhem and destruction. But by the time I got into undergrad, I ended up working in philosophy because I found there was nothing else more interesting to me. And, of course, it doesn't pay anything. No professional philosophers out
right?
Academics. And then we also played with Lego Mindstorms at the time, which were cutting-edge AI technology, little robots that you could move around and have them follow a path, neuroscience and those kind of things. And then a couple of years after that, I got heavy into coding. And understanding some of the underlying things of how they work in the machines. And that was really important to me as well. And from there, I just started diving into, about a decade ago, some of the computer vision stuff that we wanted to make for what would become BestieBot later on in life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was some great technology. Things have definitely progressed a lot. And now everybody's talking about AI. It's the hot thing now.
Yeah, it is. So let's cycle back a little bit and go back to the things that you were taking apart, because I feel like it wasn't just the stove that you took apart. So
yeah.
What else did you take apart?
I mean, there was all kinds of things, mostly machines. And so you would take washer dryers.
Oh, man.
You would take...
These are like major appliances.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, after the first shock, you can learn a couple of things pretty fast, right? So, a lot of computers themselves. Hmm. So I was custom building PCs and stuff back when it was... You know, they would come to you in a magazine and you'd have to figure out parts and mix and match parts and things. Hmm. And, you know, how do we get the drivers to work and code and stuff like that? So, yeah.
So is there like a older sibling, a cousin, a uncle, dad, mom? Like what was the inception of this? Or did this 3-year-old just say, you know what, I'm just going to start taking stuff
apart? I don't
know.
Yeah, it was just... You know, I had an impulse to take things apart and put them back together. I don't know what else to say.
I love
explain
that.
It to anybody.
So you went to undergrad for philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now were you still taking stuff apart during undergrad?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there was always that urge to continue working on. I mean, I came to school with a custom PC that I had built and everything that I worked on and. When I went to undergrad, I originally wasn't going to do philosophy. I was originally coming for government, and I was going to be an attorney and a lawyer, and I don't know why, but, you know, they made a lot of money, you know? So I thought that was the path forward.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was struck by one of my first philosophy courses where we started talking about things like free will, you know? Mm. And we started talking about real questions that are like, well, you know, how would that work in a machine? Really, how do we program that in there? How do we... You know, respond. And I was always a big science fiction fan and reading those kind of books and those important kind of weighty questions that we've been dealing with for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I mean, AI goes back as far recently, the idea of Frankenstein, right? So Mary Shelley was this idea of an inanimate object that we imbued life into via electricity, which is really a form of AI in a lot of ways that we deal with today. And it goes back thousands of years in old religions, too. They used to have this thing about golems, which you would have the breath of life imbued this inanimate object.
Mm.
And so it was a very interesting idea, and it kind of just drew me in, and from there I was hooked for a long time.
Oh man, so what was your first interaction with artificial intelligence? Was it a video game? Was it some kind of coding? What was it?
When we were growing up, there was these things called Teddy Ruxpin.
Oh my gosh, I remember those!
My sister had gotten one, and it was the neatest little thing.
Yeah!
Yeah, and the mouth moved. It sounds so electronic, but, you know, it would move and talk and interact, and, of course, I watched all the movies.
Yeah!
Like, you know, Johnny Five from Short Circuit. We grew up with C-3PO and R2-D2.
I'm alive!
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, man. Now you're tickling my childhood here. Oh man. All right. So you have Teddy Ruxpin. Did you take him apart too?
No, my family would have killed me. That's the only thing that kept my sister from causing mayhem in our house. So,
so you have this bear, and it interests you to what point?
Well, just to understand kind of how is it made? Like this idea, the animatronics of it all.
Yeah.
Right? And so Disney at that time was doing some pretty good animatronics. And still today, they do some of the best robotic work in the world.
Yeah.
And so it was just really interesting for me to kind of see how it played. You would input tapes into it. Remember, you put it in the back.
In the back.
And it would do different things. And so it was like, what is that? Is that a program? Is that, you know, how does it read that and make that work?
Mm.
So it was just the idea of how does it work?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of curiosity.
I remember I had Teddy Ruxpin, and then my sister, she's 6 years younger than me. She had TV Teddy.
And that was
you know, kind of like Teddy Ruxpin but on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
So did you have one of those as well? Or
no,
did you know about it?
I didn't know about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, over time, of course, these kind of AIs got even more extensive. So yeah. People taking care of like their robotic pets. What were those things? Tamaguchi?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, people, they had to feed their pet, their mm-hmm. artificial pet every day and, yeah. and things. And so we kind of grew up with that. And so it's really interesting that today in the artificial intelligence world, there is this real question about should we have relationships with these artificial intelligences and, you know, should we replace human interaction? It's a real big schism in the community. And I look at it as, well, we've always had them. We've always grown up with them. And so now why is there a problem, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, we've had these all our lives.
And before we go to our first break here, do you think that fear is like one of the major drivers of the pushback?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of fear about things that could be, potentialities. And often that's what fear is for most people. They worry about things that could happen instead of what's actually happening.
Mm.
And so I don't think there is a reason to be fearful about certain things, like these relationships and other things. Mm-hmm. Now, how AI may be deployed, and we'll probably talk about that later. Absolutely. There should be some things we should look at.
Okay. And again, before we go to our next break here, because we're going to be talking about BestieBot. But before we go there, should there be more regulations for artificial intelligence? Where do you stand on that?
I think there should be better regulations. And maybe we can discuss that later about exactly what that means. I don't think that going to where Europe is going is going to be helpful. I think there's different ways we can do it here in the United States, which would allow us to continue to be the world leader in the artificial intelligence world.
So better regulations and not oppressive regulations.
Exactly.
Rich, what motivated you to co-found BestieBot?
Yeah, so that's an interesting story. So Marquise, now you know we've done some work together before and other things. I worked in the autism community for over 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And did a lot of work. And I have a son who has severe autism, requires pretty much 24/7 care. And so one of the things that I was doing, I was running a startup before that did event management. And I kind of just closed it up and said, you know, is this what I want to do with the rest of my life? You know, at a certain point in your life, you realize that time is the most valuable asset that
you
have. And you want to commit yourself to do something that's going to make a difference in the world versus, am I just doing it for the money? Am I just doing it for various reasons? And so I looked at what am I going to need to do? And I was like, you know, I could build an AI system that would help take care of my son and, by extension, all the thousands of kids that we knew around the country that had these kind of conditions. And they were growing up and aging in place. And so that was originally how we got started with BestieBot. And then it kind of transformed over time into the Alzheimer's and dementia community.
Wow.
And so BestieBot now, it's a home AI platform that helps monitor and support those aging in place, right? So we deal with anybody who's aging in place. And right now we're going to start some pilot studies here soon. We're going into some homes to help monitor different activities for people to maybe chart if they're having dementia or progressing along those lines and things that we can respond to that go on around the house. So, you know, at BestieBot, we got a grant from the A2 Collective, which is a consortium from the National Institute of Aging, Johns Hopkins University, University of Pennsylvania, University of Amherst, and Massachusetts Amherst, excuse me. And that grant was to build these custom hardware systems. And it was a great way to get started in the process to build these things and to help individuals who may not otherwise get this kind of extensive monitoring.
So how has the feedback been so far? Because I'm assuming that like this thing is like catching fire.
Yeah, so
in a good way.
In a good way. Yeah, we don't want those things burning up.
Right.
In the house. So it's actually been great, Marquise. I was just at a conference here recently. The AI, of course, is super hot right now. And people are looking for how do we implement practical applications of this to make people's lives better. And so here in 2024, things are moving to what's known as local AI.
Okay.
Right? And so often you will have all these things happening in the cloud. Information will be sent out to all these other computers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're dealing with things in a house, you don't want to have to do that because, you know, sometimes people walk around the house in their birthday suit. You know what I'm talking about. So, you know, you don't want that going out to the internet.
Right.
So one of the things that we do is we do everything locally, and a lot of AI is moving in that direction.
Mm.
And so people are really interested in that kind of work right now.
Now, with the expansion and just AI just again, I'm using this term, catching fire, how have you seen BestieBot evolve with the evolution of AI?
You know, that's a great question because I started hacking on this probably about 7 years ago, and it took a lot of time to go through dozens and dozens of prototypes.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I found is that the technology is only now, 6 years later, at the point where some of these things are even possible. And that's kind of it's an interesting way that technology works.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, the generative AI, and many people here are probably familiar with ChatGPT or Claude or something like that. That is a new process that allows some reasoning capabilities to be added to these systems, which was missing in the whole process.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you're 7 years ahead.
Everybody else took a while to catch up to me, but you know they come around.
So with you being ahead of the curve, if you can discuss with us what aspects of AI are you getting into now?
Yeah, so really the hot thing right now and things that we're working on is multimodal. Okay, and so what that means is taking in different kinds of information. And so you take in vision data, you take in text data, you take in audio data, and you combine them into models to make sense of the world.
All right, and you also go around the country and you speak about AI. Remember last year you had a presentation at this at this
CPOSC.
Yes.
Yeah.
So can you talk about how you incorporate what you do with BestieBot into those presentations? Because I mean you're really dropping a lot of knowledge. In those presentations.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I travel all over the country, obviously, for these kind of things and do a lot of public speaking. And so one of the things that we run into is we come across a certain kind of technology. We come across something that's very interesting. And I try to break it down in a way that is more consumable by the average to a little bit above average experienced person with AI. There's very few people here that actually understand the intricacies of how things work. It's a very small group, unfortunately, right now. I think it is growing. I think it is expanding over time. And the goal is to try to increase the number of people who understand AI because then more people can contribute to the conversation.
Right.
Right? Intelligently.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people out there who they have this knee-jerk reaction to things that happen. We call them doomers, right? So that, you know, they see all the bad in things.
Yeah.
But that's not constructive to help move the conversation forward.
Right.
And if we can get more voices in there to see all the different things, there's all kinds of things we haven't thought of yet about how AI affects people.
Yeah.
And so I love having that in the conversations. And really, I see it as kind of a user research in a lot of ways doing the public speaking because I get to talk to people everywhere from their backgrounds and they help me make better products at BestieBot.
And what kind of feedback have you heard? Because when I seen that presentation, like my mind was blown. And this was last year and I still remember it vividly. So what kind of feedback do you receive?
Well, it depends. So back in 2018, I was warning everyone about deepfakes, right, when they first started coming out. And people didn't listen. People didn't understand what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And then here we are in 2020, and the United States government is considering all kinds of regulations and things for this particular topic because they're worried about it affecting the election this year.
Yeah.
It's easily disseminated. There's all kinds of challenges that have come around. And for instance, you probably have heard about these elderly people getting scammed by getting the voices of their kids coming out and saying, "Hey, you know, I need money right now. Send it right here." And you know, this is just one of the scams. There's multiple kinds of scams that are coming around because of these deep fakes. And so, you know, when I go out there, the feedback is they generally just ignore it because they don't see how AI is going to affect them. And I see it happening now.
Mm-hmm.
People don't understand the changes that are coming. and they're going to be gigantic. Mm. And so I know we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah.
But I think most people ignore it, and a few people are really, really excited about it, like little kids. So
yeah, I will tell you this. I'm excited. The more and more that I'm incorporating AI into my everyday life, I'm just seeing like how it's just making some things a lot easier, and is really streamlining other things in my life. So before we go to our next break here, I do want to talk about your monthly meetups with Lancaster AI.
Yeah.
How did you all get started with that?
So about 7 years ago, I found the best way to learn something is to try to teach it.
Mm.
Right? That's the best way to learn something. And so I was like, I don't know this, so I'm going to do a presentation on it, and I have 30 days to learn it. Right?
Yeah, love
and
that.
And so that's how it all started for Lancaster AI. And then we started having a group of people come out, and we have been having all kinds of trainings. We've done 10-week free trainings. We opened them up to the public, and we had 60 people come out for initial training, people with no coding experience whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
just to get them exposure to AI. And so now we have monthly meetups. They happen in Lancaster, lancasterai.com. And we just had our meetup last night, and we have about 20, 30 people come out. We have beginner talks, advanced talk, and we really tried to get the latest cutting-edge information to people and make it easily digestible at the same time, and understand what's going on. There is so much going on.
I believe it.
That no one person can understand it all.
Yeah.
And so we all lean on each other.
Mm. So on the age group now, what ages participate in this? Is it a wide range, or is it focused?
No, we have people who are high school students all the way to, I had somebody, and I shouldn't guess his age, but I must say he was probably in his 80s, 85, somewhere in that range, who came out, and he was interested in.
Wow. So when's the next meetup, and how can folks find out more about it in about 20 seconds?
They can go to lancasterai.com. We're in April, third Thursday of every month.
So, Rich, how should we be incorporating AI in our everyday lives?
Well, there's lots of things you can do with AI today, and you already hit on a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
In your daily life, you can go to it for articles. You can get help writing different things. You can get help automating all kinds of tasks in your life. It's great at summarizing different stuff. If you know how to take a lot of text and put it in there, you can get a smaller summary of that kind of text.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it for various robotics work. You can create images with it.
Mm.
That's what a lot of people really love, creating these super creative, super imaginative things that normally they would never have the ability to create.
Mm.
You can mimic voices for automation for your businesses. One person can do multiple things now in the business. You could have one person do 5 different jobs
mm-hmm.
with an AI and really scale yourself.
Wow. Now we did have an artist in here mm-hmm. That wanted to know about the created images. Now, could those images eventually hurt artists?
That is a great question.
Mm-hmm.
And we as a society obviously are still battling about this question.
Yeah.
There are some people who say that, well, these machines are not actually abusing the artist, because what they're doing is learning from the artist's techniques,
mm-hmm.
just like you would. You would look at a painting, figure out the techniques, and replicate them. And the machines are just faster and better at that process.
Yeah.
And so they're not actually stealing anything. They're just replicating. And others say, well, no, I worked very hard, 10, 15 years to learn this craft. And so these AIs taking that information is kind of a copyright violation.
Yeah.
And so right now, I think that the artists are losing that conversation.
Mm.
I think because of the way the investments and the money is going.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money to be made in doing that. And so I think that's unfortunate. I do work with a lot of artists. I have an artistic background in many ways myself. And so I definitely sympathize with those who have spent a decade or more learning these skills and honing them. And I think what's going to end up happening is that there will be less of these kind of visual artists, but they will be better in a lot of ways. And I think that they're going to be far more creative. They're going to find all kinds of new outlets for their talents to make their work even better.
So then for the artist at home that is listening to this interview, do you encourage them to embrace?
Absolutely. they have to embrace AI mm-hmm. and to make, for instance, my nephew, mm-hmm. okay, he loves manga and comics.
Okay.
And he's a young guy. He's maybe 10, 11 years old right now. Mm-hmm. And he could not create, he wants to create a story, but he also, you know, hands draws these images. Well, I'm encouraging him and working with him. Hey, why don't we go to the AI and see if it can produce these images for you? Mm. 11 years old, creating your own comic book with wow. really legitimate images. Could we ever do that before?
Not on this level.
Not on this level.
Maybe some stick figures, you know, draw some boxes and
that's
everything.
That's right.
But that's about it. So ChatGPT, Copilot, chatbot. How should we be using these mediums right now?
Okay, so it depends on what kind of plans and things that you have with these companies. From my perspective, I'm always wary from a business perspective. You have to worry about putting your information into here because a lot of these, if you're putting your information into chatbots and they're not charging you, you are the product. So anything you put in there, they're going to be using and taking your information. Okay, so you can't put anything private in there. Mm-hmm. Now, some of these companies like ChatGPT, they have an enterprise account where you can put your information and it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Same thing for coding, right? If you want to code and learn how to code, there are some options there to really get good at it. And so there's just so many things that you can do with ChatGPT right now, but I would just be wary of putting your private information in there for your general audience here.
So then for ChatGPT, folks shouldn't be putting in obviously their social security number.
Exactly.
But also if they have to explain a difficult medical situation, is that something that they should put into ChatGPT or?
I do because I have the enterprise plan I know that they're not going to be using that. And so, yeah, absolutely. I mean, these systems are getting very, very good at putting in all – you can put in your medical information. They can give you a diagnosis. Now, I'm not saying never use that. Go to a doctor right, and get a real diagnosis, right, folks? But they're actually pretty good at that. And I was just at John Hopkins recently having this conversation in December about what's going to happen to the medical community over the next couple of years. And I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot less doctor visits coming, which should be helpful for the overburdened health system right now.
Absolutely. So now you said this multiple times, mentioning ChatGPT. They're going to be using it. Your information, they're going to be using it. Mm. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it's what's known as a continuous integration, continuous delivery system. So what they do is they take your information and they the model will take it and train on it later on, right? So as you put information in, you get new information. So most people don't know that there's nothing special about ChatGPT technology. It's just the amount of data that they threw at it. It's tons and tons of data. In fact, the problem now is we're running out of data to actually train these models, right? And so what's going to happen? They're using synthetic information to train. So your data that you put into these systems and all of your companies, your social media companies, everybody that you put your data into, it's worth money, right? Because that's things that they don't have to generate or go find.
Yeah.
Right? And so, that's what's happening. That's how they keep these systems going.
All right. So let's talk about the dark side of AI here. What are some of the things on the horizon and some of the things that are already here that we should really be worried about?
Yeah, so I hesitate to promote any.
that makes sense. That makes sense.
The dark side is strong out there. Mm-hmm. So you end up having a lot of hackers using these systems to attack businesses and probe for vulnerabilities because you can do it very quickly and efficiently. Autonomous weapon systems are being used for this, and you can see that they're being deployed in the Ukraine war. And Ukraine war, for all intents and purposes, is the first AI war. And so you're seeing a lot of systems tested and developed there. And you're seeing a lot of challenges with monitoring and civil liberties challenges, which are, I believe, one of the real doomer problems that we're going to have for regulations, which we can talk about later. Mm-hmm. That's just off the top of my head, some of them. The job relocation, however you want to phrase it, is going to be a big one as well.
Now, I'm glad that you mentioned that because I really wanted to hit on surveillance and how AI is going to be incorporated with that. As citizens of this country, what worries should we have in the forefront of our minds with surveillance and artificial intelligence?
Well, I talk about this a lot on stage, so I guess I can do it here in a public forum and be okay. But this is actually one of my primary concerns. I have a book that I'm writing will be released in June called The New AI Rebellion. And it's surveillance and the work that we're doing is going to be a top conversation of that because AI is being deployed in a lot of ways that your privacy for all intents and purposes is gone, and it has been gone for a long time. But the subtle manipulation that you're going to have from the AI, and so a lot of these AIs are being trained with what are known as guardrails, okay? And so somebody is putting in artificial guardrails so that you can't ask questions. Or if you ask these questions, it guides you in a certain way. Right. And so just recently, you probably saw in the news, Google had this real problem where they released their images. Right. And the images were very historically inaccurate. And it what it did was it highlighted for in a visual medium what these biases were that were being programmed into the systems. And so obviously we worry about who's in control of that. And they're subtly manipulating your thoughts. It's not an overt surveillance. As long as you behave and do what do the right things, there won't be any problems. But it's the guiding of the thoughts that the challenges are.
All right. Well, we are getting into the thick of things.
That's right.
As I like to say. So should there be a fear of AI eventually thinking for itself?
Well, I don't think AI, it's not necessarily thinking for itself. It's a conglomeration of the data. I'm not one of those people that thinks that, I call it simulacra. Okay, it's this idea of simulated intelligence, and it's going to be very convincing to you that it's alive and real. Okay, but for all intents and purposes, until it can take care of itself and live, like that's the very thing that life does. It life progresses in a way to try to overcome death, its own death. Like, that's what it does. Until the machines are at that point, I don't think we have to worry too much about it. I think the more danger from AI is going to be from how we use it against each other as humans.
And you mentioned that the war in Ukraine, they're already using some of this technology already?
Yeah, so the Pentagon has all kinds of systems out there, and they claim that they are always a human in control of the kill loop, right? That it is always a human making that decision. It's unknown if the Russians are abiding by that. There has been some autonomous systems that have been out there that it's questionable whether that's actually happened or not. But yeah, as long as there's a human in the kill loop, it could be okay. But yeah, they're the models, especially they're using a lot of open source models that you're using drone technology.
Yeah.
And of course, the drones are a really low cost. It's maybe $10,000 for a drone versus a $2 million missile. Who's going to win that battle long term?
Right.
And so a lot of low threat actors are using these drones. And here, you can use them in the United States, and they're terrified here in the United States about people using drones for terrorist acts.
I believe it. So so AI and its impact on jobs. We're going to get more into that on the other side. But first, I wanted to ask this. How does AI impact traditional job roles?
Yeah, so you're not going to notice much in the meantime. I mean, things where you do a lot of and repetitively on a computer, like logging information, your daily workflows, AI is going to really take over a lot of that over time. Anything that you can be programmed easily and it's consistently done over and over will get replaced. Yeah.
Bestie Bot, I just want to highlight that one more time. For somebody that may be interested in the services of Bestie Bot, what's the best way that they can contact you all? The best way to do it?
Yeah, so I keep my email publicly open at rich@bestiebot.com. You can go to the website, bestiebot.com, and we're looking for people who might be interested in testing out some of these systems, or they have a family who are a member. And we are starting We're just collecting emails for right now for contacts, and we will be getting in contact with people here this summer to start testing units.
Oh, so wait, so back up a little bit. So you have tech that you're testing out for folks?
Yeah, absolutely. So these home AI platforms that we're using, right now they're focused on fall detection. Primarily, we also have some mobility assessments and telehealth that we're working on. And one of the nice things is for some of our business-to-business customers, we're customizing things. So if they have specific needs, you know, and for home users, we can help code some of the things that they want specifically for contact information.
Oh, man. So then this is the good side of AI, yes, and artificial intelligence.
That's right, the good side. And we got to focus on the good side, right?
Right, right. Absolutely, absolutely. But not right now. So going back to our discussion about AI and jobs, how do you foresee the future relationship between the job industry and artificial intelligence?
Okay, well, you're going to have a lot of jobs that are under $20 an hour that are going to be replaced right now. And so you see it already. Look at the factories. Yeah. Most of them, Amazon factories, a lot of them run off of robotics now. They're a very huge robotics company. If you look at Tesla and their Optimus robotics platform, they also work through Figure and a number of other companies. They're moving very quickly. Now, so those jobs that require what are known as gross motor skills, which is just heavy lifting and moving and taking things around, a lot of those jobs are going to go, and they're going to need less of them. I mean, you're still going to need people to manage the robots and configure all those things. So it's just a kind of a transition, but you'll need less of them for that. And so it's considered a productivity boost. The other thing that you're going to find, though, is with things that require fine motor skills, okay, that's going to take a little bit longer. So a lot of blue collar work. So like plumbers, you're going to need plumbers for a long, long time. You're going to need a lot of tradespeople for a long, long time. In fact, we have a shortage of tradespeople here in the United States. And so a lot of those are not going to be replaced anytime soon. A lot of white collar work is going to be – you're going to need less of them at the office. I mean, look at – and I'll use this as an example. Look at X. Twitter, right? So Elon comes in, fires what, 50%, 70%? I don't remember how many, a huge percentage of the company. And guess what? It's still running and it's still operational. And so what he proved was that a lot of these positions just aren't needed anymore, or they're just what's known as bloat. So a lot of white collar positions are probably going to go away. There's going to be a lot less need for coders. Coders, you got to remember, are at the end of the day, they're problem solvers. And so you're going to need people to solve problems still, but maybe not use the same tools that they've always used.
Now, somebody that's listening to this and they're like, oh my gosh, all right, that's me.
Yeah.
how can they remain employed? How can they stay hireable? How should they embrace this artificial intelligence?
Got to start using it. Like, you have to learn it. It's just like a lot of secretaries during the 70s and 80s who had to learn, switch from typewriters to database entry and computers. You just have to learn the new skills to stay employable if that's what you want to do. But also, I want to mention, as an entrepreneur to all those out there, there's no better time to be an entrepreneur either and work for yourself, because now you have the ability to scale yourself and with AI, and you can do a lot of great things there too.
Yeah, so what's the best way to start learning artificial intelligence? You know, from the person that is 68 years old, that's like, you know, you can't teach old dog new tricks, to the 14-year-old that knows everything.
They always do.
They always do. You know, what's the best way to start teaching yourself?
You just got to hop on and do it. You really do. There's also some great courses from Andrew Ng at deeplearning.ai that I know people have used. And there's all kinds of intro courses. You can just go onto YouTube and find some. You don't necessarily have to learn how to code. You don't have to learn all that stuff. But just start playing around with AI. See what it does, what it doesn't do, and kind of how it could help you.
Yeah. And are there any risks associated with the widespread adoption of AI?
I mean, there's always risks involved, absolutely. But I think we talked about a lot of them, about, you know, just like you had to learn how to use social media. You know, everybody used to publish everything out there. And now people are more private with some of their stuff. They're more selective with who they talk to and how they handle it. And you're going to learn how to do that with AI as well.
Now, for our leaders in the country, is there a fear from the experts in the field that this AI might be misused? issues, especially with the United States war machine?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the concerns that I have. It's not just the war machine. It's also a big thing about civil liberties and mm-hmm. protecting individuals and protecting the work of people. And there's a lot of danger. We got to make sure, because what ends up happening often in a regulatory environment is that you'll have the big players come in, and it's not about managing the regulations, but crushing competition. Mm. And so open source models and things have generated incredible amounts of job and prospects for a lot of people. And to regulation, if we kill that and instead only allow the big players to run everything, mm-hmm. then you're going to find that there's not as much freedom to do things mm-hmm. as there usually is. And so there's a really large schism in the community right now to, you know, how do we keep things free and open for those – for the anybody could access a model, put it on their computer, run it, and, you know, try to make a run at it.
So then what should folks be doing right now?
Well, I would, if you're interested in AI, you can talk to your local congressperson, whoever that is. Mm-hmm. You could also get into and start loading your own AIs. It is not difficult. There's a couple of programs that you could use, LM and Text Generation Web UI. If you want to load something on your local computer and even play around with it and mm-hmm. see what you could do, and, you know, go on ChatGPT, learn as much as you can. Find out who there is. Don't believe the doomers. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's always doomers for everything that happens in life, and you just kind of have to ignore them and keep a hopeful watch on the future.
Oh, keep a hopeful watch on the future. I have this thing where I say, put it on the shirt, and that right there, keep a hopeful watch on the future. I love that. I love this conversation, Rich. This was everything, man. Thank you for coming on the Spark and just giving us this great insight.
Awesome. Marquise, thank you so much for having me out.
Yes. So what's next for yourself?
What's next for myself is we're going to get a lot of these pilots out for BestieBot. Mm-hmm. I got a new book coming out. The new AI Rebellion will be out in June. And just continue to go out there, do good work, and reach as many people as possible.